You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM. Reporting live for WFHB, this is Maria McKinley.
And I'm Doug Storm. This is the Daily Local News for Monday, June 1st, 2015.
The rural community there is kind of a live and let live. They may not like what we're doing, but they don't necessarily take overt measures to stop us.
The trials and successes of operating an LGBTQ pride group in Spencer. Later in the show, in a WFHB community report.
Also coming up in the next half hour, an organization serving homeless families on Activate, our weekly segment spotlighting people working for positive change in our community. But first, these local headlines.
Just 12% of eligible voters in Indiana cast ballots in the May 5th municipal primary election. That's according to numbers released today by Secretary of State Connie Lawson. About 327,000 Hoosiers voted in the primary out of about 2.6 million eligible voters. Only residents who lived within the limits of cities or towns were eligible to vote. Monroe County had lower turnout than most others. Just 10.3% of eligible voters cast ballots in the Bloomington and Ellettsville municipal elections. Turnout was higher in Lawrence County, where about 12% of voters participated. Among local counties, the highest turnout was in Greene County, where 28% voted. Of the entire state, Stark County had the highest number of voters, with a 33% turnout.
A state biologist has just photographed one of Monroe Lake's original and oldest bald eagles. The original eagles were released in the late 1980s when the State Department of Natural Resources began its restoration program at Monroe Lake. Bald eagles were federally endangered species when the division began the reintroduction program. The original program eagles are identifiable by an orange color band on one wing and a metal leg band. DNR employees identified the eagle as one that had been assigned the name C-43. It was taken from a nest in Whitestone Harbor, Alaska on July 22, 1988. The bird is now 27 years old. The Bird Banding Laboratory in Maryland has documented only 6 banded bald eagles that have lived longer, according to the DNR. Furthermore, a brood patch on her breast indicates that she is still raising young. Thanks to the success of the reintroduction program, there are now an estimated 200 to 250 eagle nesting areas in Indiana.
The Bloomington City Council has shown support for new financial control measures that would affect the city's Redevelopment Commission, also known as the RDC. This action was prompted by the major fraud perpetrated on the city government by former city engineer Justin Wyckoff. In March, Wyckoff pleaded guilty to defrauding the city of more than $800,000 while employed as a project manager for the city. The funds were intended for concrete contracts for sidewalk work within a city TIF district. These funds were authorized and overseen by the RDC City Controller Jeff Underwood. City Controller Jeff Underwood told the council last week the new rules and procedures will formalize internal controls recently adopted by the RCD.
We have developed a project review form that essentially will lay out any project that staff or the administration would bring forward to the RDC. And that would lay out a description of the project, timeline, estimated cost of the project, as well as the phases that would be associated that, whether it be a single contract or multiple contracts. And that would be vetted through the RDC. And it would give them an opportunity to ask questions and kind of a deeper dive into the program and project itself. At that point, if it's acceptable to them, they would approve a resolution on that project plan. That does not authorize the spending of any funds. We would then use normal procurement processes for the phases of that contract, just like we do on an appropriated fund, and by state law and local statutes for whatever type of service, goods, or construction project. We will then bring that back to the RDC, and it will have a summary of what was the procurement process, who was solicited, you know, a copy of the specifications if they want that, and a recommendation on the award of a contract.
Under the new rules, the RDC would review each phase and associated expenditure for every contract. Furthermore, every prospective expenditure would be examined by the city's auditing department and legal department, and then go back to the RDC before any final expenditure is approved by the auditor and city legal counsel. Underwood responded to a question from Councilmember Andy Ruff as to how much of the Wyckoff fraud could have been blocked if the proposed controls had been in place at the time of the fraud.
Fraud comes down to two things: need and opportunity. We can't manage people's needs necessarily or know what people's needs are. What we manage against is the opportunity. So what you try to do is, you can never eliminate, but you lessen as much as possible the opportunity to commit fraud. And the more people involved in the transaction, the harder it is to perpetrate fraud.
Underwood also explained the city's increasing use of electronic fund transfers to process receipts and expenditures, as well as computer software safeguards for these transfers, as a further means to avoid fraud. In response to a question from Councilmember Dave Rallo, Underwood assured the City Council that his office has been and will remain open to whistleblower queries concerning the activities of city employees. The council resolution also specifies that all funding approvals should be tied to specific contracts and agreements with specific vendors, with a specific payment termination date. The council then voted unanimously in support of the new financial controls for the Bloomington Redevelopment Commission.
Rhino's Youth Center is hosting a week-long multimedia exhibit beginning this Friday to showcase student work. Rhino's will open its doors to the public as part of the Bloomington Open Studios tour this weekend. Rhino's co-assistant director Liv Mershon said each day will feature a specific type of media work created by teenagers in the after-school program.
We want to showcase each of our programs. On Monday we have video, Tuesday is visual arts, we have screen printing and mural arts. Sometimes we just paint or do, you know, different things like paper mache. Wednesday is our writing day. We have a zine that you may have seen around town. It's called The Antagonist. Thursday is Youth Radio, and then we've just started new programming on Fridays called Music Fridays, and right now it's just been kind of a casual jam time where we just share music we like and play music together.
The Rhino's Youth Multimedia Exhibit is a unique member of the Bloomington Open Studios Tour in that it exhibits work done by teenagers, including work by Rhino's alumni and about 15 current members.
We just want to give the kids a chance to show off what they do and to also show community members how to get involved, especially youth community members who want to start coming into Rhino's and making art with us.
Mershon said this week-long exhibit may become an annual event.
The Bloomington Rotary Club's 13th annual Race for Literacy will take place next Saturday, June 13th, to benefit Teachers Warehouse. Teachers Warehouse is operated by members of the Bloomington Rotary Club and other volunteers and aims to assist teachers from Brown, Green, Lawrence, Monroe, and Owen counties by providing free school supplies for students in need. Past beneficiaries of the race include Bloomington DePaul School and Stonebelt. Bloomington DePaul School later became Pinnacle School and helps children with learning disabilities. Stonebelt aids residents with developmental disabilities. Race for Literacy sponsor Vicki Temple Davison has worked on the event since 2003.
I feel like it is such a good community race. It's when you look at Rotary and the Rotary Foundation, you know, the principles of Rotary, you know, is it good to all? Is it the truth? You know, this is what Rotary's about. And then the Teacher's Warehouse, it is just such a gracious giving. I mean, it takes care of so many teachers in so many counties.
Davison says teachers often spend their own money to purchase supplies for students who have none. The 5K run and walk is organized on a volunteer basis. It will have a flatter and faster course this year compared to previous races as it winds through the College Mall area. Doug Wilson is a Bloomington Rotary Club member and is proud that members of the club participate.
We can always use more volunteers, but it's great. That's one of the good things about the Rotary Club being involved is we have more than 125 members in our club, and it takes about 25 volunteers just to be out there the day of the race to make sure that everybody takes the right turns and is able to get everything that they need for the race. And our club's done a real good job, I think, of having enough people to handle that. So on the Saturday of the race, it's all of our club members that you see out along the course. And I ran it last year for the first time and plan running it again. It's the members that I see at our Tuesday meetings every week who you see along the course, making sure we go in the right direction and providing water and cheering everyone on.
Awards will be given to the best male and female runners and walkers overall, in addition to the top three males and females in each age group. The race will start at 8 a.m. at Bloomington Hardware, located at 2700 East Covenanter Drive. Davison expects about 200 participants this year. Registration is $20 and will be available starting at 7 a.m. on race day. According to Wilson, the race's six sponsors have covered the cost of putting on the event, which means all money raised through the registration goes to Teachers Warehouse. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Doug Storm.
And I'm Maria McKinley. The 9th annual Spencer LBGTQI Pride Festival will take place this Saturday from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. This year's theme is Color Our World with Pride. The festival is held by the Spencer Pride Group. Correspondent Kara Tolman spoke with the group's director, Judy Epp, for this WFHB Community Report.
Hello, I'm Kara Tolman for WFHB. Today we have Judy Epp. She is the secretary and director of Spencer Pride. Thank you so much for being with us today, Judy.
Thank you for having me, Kara.
So could you tell us a bit about how Spencer Pride was formed?
Certainly. Spencer Pride itself was formed in 2007. Previous to that, one of our community members had a need for a support organization, and we had none in our community. So actually what we started was a PFLAG, Parents, Friends, and Families of Lesbians and Gays. We felt like that would give us more legitimacy in the community than starting an actual Pride group, as well as giving us the resources that we could would be available to us with a national organization. We could get printed materials, we could get advice, etc. So we started a PFLAG in the beginning, but most of us were of the GLBT community. So we, one of our members suggested having a Pride Festival.
And how has the festival itself been perceived by Spencer?
It's really kind of an amazing thing how that acceptance has grown. In the beginning, really for the festival, we didn't get that much pushback, and I think part of that is because the community, the rural community there, is kind of a live and let live. They may not approve of us, they may not like what we're doing, but they don't necessarily take overt measures to stop us from doing what we're doing. That being said, we have had some issues. There was one back really early on. We joined the Chamber of Commerce. We're a corporation. We're a 501c3. We joined the Chamber of Commerce, and the director at the time let her religious beliefs interfere with her job and actively tried to sabotage us, wouldn't let our materials be in the office of the chamber, and tried to stop us from having certain events, but she was unsuccessful. She's no longer there. There were some churches. We were meeting in a church, Presbyterian Church Hall in Spencer. They've been very kind and welcoming to us since we started. And we were going to hold a film showing there on bullying in October for Gay History Month 1 year. And some of the other churches in the community banded together and tried to bully them into stopping us from being there, which was kind of ironic, show on bullying, but you're trying to bully the Presbyterians. But nevertheless, the Presbyterians has stood firm and on our behalf, and we had the film, and that has not happened again. 1 year, somebody threw nails in the street the morning of the festival, but again, interestingly enough, it was the police that were there to help us in Spencer, the town of Spencer Police, found the nails and picked them all up and told us about it. So it's really been more of a good experience than, like I say, we've had our challenges, which you would expect in a rural community. But the other thing that's so important and heartening about that rural community is when you have people come to you and say, I'm so glad you're here because my child needed this here. My child hasn't been accepted here, and it's important for my child to see that it's okay to be gay or lesbian or bi or trans or whatever that child is. Or even parents coming there who are the ones of our community for their children to see that we're okay as well. My wife and I are retired. We've been together 38 years. We see ourselves as an example, as well as our president, Jonathan, and his husband and their two-year-old. So, and our other board members actually are straight allies. So we hopefully represent the wide array of our supporters in the community.
So members of Spencer Pride have participated in a video called It Gets Better to share their stories with the LGBTQ community around the world. Could you give some background as to how the members got involved in this inspiring project?
I believe we were asked to participate in that. So yes, we're willing to do that anytime, any place, anywhere. We will do that. We've also done other things such as our local Walmart, actually, who is a one of our sponsors, asked us to come and do a panel for regional Walmart managers. And we talked about our stories and how corporations like Walmart can make a difference in our community by things as simple as when a man comes through your checkout with a baby, don't assume there's a wife at home. Look at your greeting cards and see, are you really buying greeting cards that work for the whole community, including our community? Do you have a gender neutral restroom? So we also get involved in things like that for the community.
And the recent RFRA Act has brought attention to the lack of legal protection in Indiana for discrimination against sexual orientation. Though some cities like Bloomington and Indianapolis have a citywide human rights law, Spencer does not. Have you seen any discrimination in action?
I have not seen any discrimination in Spencer. That doesn't mean it's not there. I'm unaware of any. I would love for us to initiate a human rights ordinance in Spencer. We're not really a city, we're a town, so we don't have a mayor. We have a town council, we have a town board, a city council, and hopefully maybe once we get over the festival, maybe some of our people would be able to start work on something like that. It's definitely something that's in the back of our minds that needs to be done, regardless of whether you think there's overt discrimination or not.
And one last question. At this year's festival, what kind of vendors will be there?
I know that we have at least 80 vendors that I'm aware of. The courthouse lawn is completely full, but we still have street space available for any of you out there that still wanted to come and be a vendor. We have a lot of retail vendors this year. Actually, the Democrats will be there signing up voters. And the Owen County Humane Society will be there. The UU Church will be there among the nonprofits. We also have a lot of food options this year. We've got cotton candy. We've got hot pretzels. We've got elephant ears, snow cones, just a vast array of food options. Reverend John Simon is going to be there to marry people. If anybody wants to get married at the festival, you Wow. must have your license. He can't get your license for you. You must first have gotten that from the court clerk. Bring your license to the festival, and you can get married at the festival. We have an alpaca farm that's going to be at the festival this year, bringing alpacas. It is totally family-friendly. We will have a slip and slide for the kids, and, of course, our all-day entertainment. We've just gotten tremendous support. It's going to be the best ever. So now we need the crowd. Bring a beach towel, bring a blanket, and spend the day.
That sounds incredible. And Judy, I want to thank you so much for being with us here today. And for WFHB, I'm Kara Tolman.
Admission to the festival is free. It will take place Saturday, June 6th, outside the Owen County Courthouse in Spencer. For more information about Spencer Pride, contact Judy at info@spencerpride.org.
Support for WFHB comes from listeners like you and Smithville Fiber, a local provider of high-speed internet, voice, and TV. Smithville now offers security systems for homes and businesses. More information on Smithville's full line of services is available online at smithville.com.
Now it's time for Activate, our weekly segment spotlighting people working for positive change in our community.
Welcome to Activate, a weekly segment spotlighting people who make a positive impact on our community through direct involvement in a cause they care about. WFHB hopes that these examples inspire you to get involved in something you believe in, no matter what the particular cause.
Hi, I'm Elaine Gwynn, the Executive Director of New Hope Family Shelter.
Hi, I'm Rachel Guglielmo, and I'm a volunteer at New Hope Family Shelter.
New Hope is the only family shelter that will accept a single dad, married or unmarried couples, or same-sex couples with children. And the mission of New Hope Family Shelter is helping homeless families in Monroe County, helping them get through the trauma of homelessness.
Well, I read about New Hope first in the Herald Times, and I was really struck by the fact that they serve entire families. I've never seen anything like that before, so I found it very interesting and very impressive. Then I went in to speak to Elaine a little bit to learn a little bit more about the shelter and how they operate, and I was struck once again by the attention that they give to the comprehensive needs of an individual and a family. I've been volunteering at the shelter a few hours a week, just answering the phone and helping with the newsletter. So I have a very small role. I contribute, you know, a small percentage of the total amount of work that they're doing there, but it's allowed me to be an observer and really to learn a lot about what New Hope does and about homelessness in general. And one of the things that's really struck me working there is kind of obvious, but I think still a lot of people don't realize it, that addressing homelessness is not only and maybe not even primarily about giving people a place to stay. It's about addressing all of the reasons why a person becomes homeless or a family becomes homeless in the first place. And so finding a solution to that is also has to be comprehensive. It also involves addressing all of those factors and giving the person all the support that they need to get themselves out of that situation. At New Hope, I can see that when a person leaves, when a person transitions into independent housing, they do it with a great deal of support from New Hope. And New Hope doesn't just send them on their way and wave. They send them on their way with all kinds of forms of support and all kinds of tools that they need to help ensure that the transition is not temporary, but it really sets them on their feet towards a totally new start.
Some of the things that I've noticed that have changed in the last 4 years since we opened is the amount of awareness that is out there about family homelessness and that family homelessness exists. And also that there are single fathers who become homeless and have nowhere to go, or a same-sex couple would be split up without a place like New Hope. So that has changed in the awareness about that issue. One thing about our volunteers is we rely heavily on them, and no volunteer job is small. It's huge, because without our volunteers, those are extra hours or extra time that either myself or case managers are not able to devote to our families. And so there is no job too small for us to have help with, whether it's answering phones or doing some data entry for us. I have a variety of opportunities ranging from helping in our garden to working one-on-one in our children's program. If someone is interested in that, they could go to our website at newhope4families.org and look at our How You Can Help section.
You may visit the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network website to see a full organizational profile and current volunteer needs at bloomingtonvolunteernetwork.org. Now here's a rundown of volunteer opportunities in Bloomington and Monroe County.
For the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, I'm Lucy Shake. My Sister's Closet has assisted over 1,200 women to have access to workplace attire and interview clothing to help them on their way to employment and self-sufficiency. You can volunteer to be a part of this dynamic organization by volunteering at their bargain clothing boutique. Volunteers get an extra bonus by earning $1 in free store credit for each hour they volunteer. Middleway House has many volunteer opportunities for individuals to get trained and advocate for women who have experienced domestic violence or sexual assault, including crisis line and legal advocacy. And that's a look at just some of the ways you can connect to your community through volunteering.
You've been listening to Activate, a co-production of WFHB and the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, working together to build an empowered, vibrant, and engaged community. For Bloomington Community Radio, I'm Jennifer Whitaker. All episodes of Activate are available online at wfhb.org/news/activate.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB, supported by Smithville Fiber, a local provider of high-speed internet, TV, voice, and security services. Today's headlines were written by Kara Tolman, Jordan Guskey, and Sierra Gardner, along with David Murphy for Cats Week, a partnership with Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Kara Tolman.
Activate is produced by Jennifer Whitaker, along with the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network. Our engineer is Chris Martin. Our theme music is provided by The Impossible Shapes. Executive producer is Joe Crawford. For WFHB, I'm Doug Storm.
And I'm Maria McKinley. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program. You can hear tonight's full broadcast as well as all other WFHB news programming online at wfhb.org.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. For more information about joining our volunteer team of citizen journalists, email news@wfhb.org.
Now stay tuned for Bring It On, our local forum on African American people and culture, coming up next on WFHB.
The Daily Local News is produced by a staff of over 50 volunteers
working in the WFHB News and Public Affairs Department.
Comments, suggestions, and story ideas
may be submitted directly to our news staff via email.
The address is news@wfhb.org.